BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards pay back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everyone. Jamie Diaz, Barks to Basics. I am so excited for, well, obviously my guest today, but also the topic. So Dr. Megan Petroff, and she's going to explain everything she is. Hi, Megan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yay. Is puppy socialization. So every time I post on social media, people get wild about not taking their puppies out before shots. So I had to have an expert here besides myself on this. So Megan, explain what your certifications are. Like, obviously you're a veterinarian, but what else are you?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm the director of a clinical behavioral medicine service that is a referral service at a specialty hospital on Long Island. And I see referral level cases of abnormal behavior, like aggression, separation anxiety, fear aggression, which is going to be really relevant today. I'm a veterinarian, and then I did general practice for a few years before I specialized in behavior, completing a 3-year clinical behavioral medicine residency at a private practice in Florida.
So that's how I originally was working with Megan on Dr. Petroff on behavior cases, right? So they kind of, we are all a team. So let's jump in here first. Now, I always tell my clients the core window, I mean, it's really probably 3 to 16 weeks, but you don't have the puppies at that time. So that you should socialize your puppy properly is 8 to 16 weeks. So a couple of things I wanted to ask you. One, do you agree with that time frame? And I also want to know, not in your behavior stuff, in your veterinarian school, how much behavior courses do they go over with you in vet school?
Yeah. Good question. So let's start with, what is socialization? So it's that period, like you said, around 3 weeks of age to about 12 to 14 weeks of age. And although most of us get our puppies, if we have them at that age, later than that, it's still really relevant because the experiences that your dog is having before that time they come to you around 8 weeks of age or so is very relevant. And I see a lot of that. For example, if someone comes from a breeder, and the breeder out here, there's a lot of breeders on farms in Pennsylvania. And that's great if you want to live on a farm long term, but if you don't, you're trying to live on Long Island in the suburbs, that's not necessarily a great place to spend that 3 to 5 weeks until 8 weeks when you come home if they're not doing some due diligence to help socialize them. So we'll circle back to that, but it's essentially the period of time that they're most open to experiences around the world. So anything that you want them to be used to later on, you want them to be getting exposure to during that time. So that's not just dogs, right? That's one of the misconceptions. It's everything. Different surfaces, different people, different heights, wearing hats, wearing masks, all those things. And I mean, it's been a while now, so maybe I just don't remember, but I don't think I got much of anything about it when I was in vet school. So, you know, I think that probably contributes to why we still have a lot of people that are a little bit divided out there when it comes to veterinarians saying things that aren't necessarily what the veterinary behaviorists are saying, which is we need to be socializing right away, 8 weeks of age, getting out there, staying up to date on vaccines, but we can get out there safely. Otherwise, we run the risk of significant fear aggression later on. So some people are still saying you shouldn't be taking your puppy out until they're fully vaccinated. And the problem with that is that's when that period is over, right? That's about four months of age.
Correct. And I go crazy on this. And I'm pretty blunt on social media and tell people, if your vet is telling you not to socialize till they're fully vaccinated, finding another veterinarian. And that's not because they might be a great vet, but I think you have to be up on, like, behavior problems is the number one reason why we have so many dogs in the shelter and, you know, all of these problems is because of that window. And I don't know where you were at in during COVID, like in your practice, but I have never seen so many puppies that were put on medications because they were in a bubble for those weeks. We always say, right, a COVID puppy. They were in that bubble for those weeks. And to a regular owner, they're like, oh my gosh, this is a perfect time to get a puppy. We're in lockdown.
Yeah.
Right? We're in lockdown. I can literally devote, I can't go to work. I can literally devote all of my time to this puppy. And then what happened is when the world opened up, the puppies could not handle the world. And it was terrible to see. I still have some of them that come to my training centers now when we first opened up. And I see the puppies at, I know an unsocialized puppy the second that I see them. Right?
Because
you can tell, like, wow, this dog is either really scared coming into my school, like not normal puppy behaviors. What are, first of all, why are so many vets divided though? Why are, you know, people trust their veterinarians as they should. I always go to my vet friends, you know, you, Dr. Radassa, like when I need information, because you guys are the experts in so much. But why do you think that these other vets aren't jumping our... I mean, there's so much information out there now and they have to be seeing these fear issues coming into their office. Why do you think that is? That they're so divided?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that's probably multifactorial. And I don't want to speak for other people, but some things I can imagine. You're right that information's been out there for a long time. So we've had the AVSAB position statement, the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior, since 2008, saying that puppies should not be waiting until that final vaccine is over to socialize, that we should be doing it before that time. So that information's been out there. That's a well-respected society, as well as studies that have been around for a significant amount of time. But sometimes those things, I think, just aren't always mainstream knowledge, doesn't get to the right places, perhaps. And then, of course, there's probably an influence that there isn't one veterinary behaviorist at every university. Not everyone is getting education on that. So that might play into that. But I'm sure people have some of their own experiences. Of course, as veterinarians, we're all influenced by the things that we've seen. And every veterinarian who has been in general practice has treated and seen those cases of canine parvovirus. And that's what we are generally as vets and pet owners most concerned about when it comes to trying to keep our puppies safe, is keeping them safe from infectious disease like parvovirus. So I think this is a really great time to talk about how we have a study, right, that indicates that puppies that went to puppy class were compared to a group of puppies that did not go to puppy class. And we sort of have to give the caveat, they're not all created equal, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got, they should start around 8 weeks of age or so. They should have their full first vaccine up to date, their parasite prevention. They should be keeping up to date on their vaccines throughout that, because generally they're about 6 weeks long or so. Vaccines are every 3 to 4 weeks during that series. And it should be in a location where you don't have unvaccinated dogs coming around there. It should be clean, indoors, like a dog training facility is a great place for that. And we know that by looking at that study, they compared where the dogs that went to puppy class more likely to get parvovirus than the group that did not go to puppy class, and they were not significantly more likely to get it. So this is the reason that we kind of are like trying to cram it down people's throats, that you can get them out there. Like you and I were talking before the show, doesn't mean we should be taking our puppies to, you know, dog parks and stuff, but we can, there's a big difference between just being inside and not touching feet on the ground until 16 weeks of age and going to dog parks. There's a lot of middle ground we can be working with safely.
Yeah, I hear that a lot too. Don't put the feet on the ground. And I'm like, what is happening? What is going on? So I get it. Parvo, when I post this on social media, a lot of people, my dog had parvo, my dog died from parvo. Like, I get it. It's super, super serious. But like you had mentioned, we, can do things in a safe way to not have our daughter. And listen, there's a chance for anything we do in life, right? Your dog can get bad vaccines. We can get bad vaccines. Like, things can happen to our dogs, but there are safe ways that we can do that. So what, in your experience, or what would you suggest? I know I have some things, but what would you suggest? I just got my puppy, 8 weeks old. What are some of the top things that you would suggest I do with that 8 week old puppy out in the world?
I think first we want to also think about really proactively, what kind of life do I envision for this puppy? What am I hoping to expose it to? If this is a family who's planning to have kids at some point, we should probably be getting out to a park where we can see children on a blanket or from the car with the door open or the window open and feeding treats. So I think it's important to evaluate, what am I hoping for this dog? Do I want this dog to be social with other dogs, with other people, to be going places, to go to the coffee shop? I think it kind of starts there of figuring out what are the goals that we have. And after that, just looking at what are the places that can replicate that. So there's all sorts of ideas. I've been involved with a few of my friends who've had puppies, help socializing them, because that's one thing about me. If I'm even sort of a minor acquaintance of you and I find out you have a puppy that's coming, we're going to have a coffee date or something, right? So I can help spread that knowledge. So I have a friend that they live in Brooklyn, which is obviously really busy. And the first night that puppy came home at 8 weeks, I was like, all right, we're going to dinner outside, because this is a dog that's going to be surrounded by noise, urban environment, people. And so he's a little cavalier. We had him in his little carrier. We walked to dinner and he sat on our laps in the carrier, or just without the carrier, on our laps throughout dinner. And we're bringing treats so that we compare the things that are going to be loud noises happening, like cars, they were playing music, people going by, all that with a little treat, so you can build those positive associations. So I think it depends on what are we trying to prepare this puppy for in life.
So I think that's super important. I think I have to ask that more to my clients, because it's so true. Like, what are the goals? And sometimes I think you also have to think, you know, your goal may not be, I'm having kids, right? You're 21 or you're 22 years old and you're like, that's like so far out of your mind, but it could happen in that dog's lifespan. And now your dog is like terrified of children because they've absolutely never seen one, because you never socialized them around them. Same with like men. Right. Well, maybe you're not dating anybody right now, but then there is going to maybe come a time that you are dating a man. So I think goals, yes, I think I need to ask people that more often, because I just want them socialized with everything just in case, you know what I mean? Even though if you might be a homebody, but I'm going to start asking that, about the goals. And then also for people to think of, like, not just today's goals, right? Like, maybe what's going to be in the future for those goals.
Yeah, I get so many people that are expecting or about to have a child, and they know their dog has fear aggression towards children. They've had historical barking on walks or growling or something, and it's hard to think far ahead, like 10 years, 15 years, but sometimes we need to be. And what happens is, during that period of socialization, we have what's called dendritic or synaptic pruning happening, which means that your brain is kind of like a big tree with tons of branches. And based on the experiences that we have during that time, we're trimming things down. So the things that I don't use, I'm not exposed to, I don't really need those pathways, so the brain trims them away. The things that I am going to use, we're going to keep those pathways. So if we don't have exposure to bikes and kids and whatever we think we need to be used to, we trim away those branches. And then later on, when we're exposed to that thing, it's going to be processed. We don't know how to process it. It's okay. This is scary. And it becomes something that's threatening.
I love that analogy for that. I might steal that as well, because it is. It's like, you don't think of those things, or your dog's not around bikes, or, and you probably know scientifically more of this than I'm going to say. But so I usually tell people, so 8 to 16 weeks, right? Say a lot of my clients will say, oh, my puppy's fine. Like, he's good. Oh, he loves people. He's the dogs that he's seen, he may only have seen three, right? And they don't really take him that many places, or maybe once or twice. So they think their dog is fine, right? Looks like a happy-go-lucky, not afraid of anything puppy. I usually tell my clients, it's not usually till, and you can correct me, or I'm sure you know the actual term for this, but like 9 months to a year, like you don't see the fears until later. Like you're not going to see that your dog is going to be reactive to bikes because the two bikes that he saw, he was great with. So what, am I talking out of my butt or do we?
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Often. Yeah. I see a few things happen. Sometimes there's no problem at all until that time of around social maturity, like 9 months to a year to 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like all of a sudden, according to the family, mm-hmm. we had an issue. And one of a couple things happens. Often if they can show me videos, I look back and I say, look, your puppy was actually avoiding people, or they're approaching to sniff, but they actually looked worried. Their ears were back and then they retreated. It's not really normal social behavior. And so we just missed some early warning signs. And when those distance increasing signals like lip licking, tail being down, ears going back, stress yawning, stress panting, when it didn't work, they figured out that aggression was a lot more clear. And all of a sudden, once we had growling and barking, they got more distance from the thing that was scary for them. So then that coping mechanism is the one that they're going to rely on. So sometimes that's what I think happens in those cases. So we're seeing all of a sudden around a year of age or so, something like that. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, I think we just don't necessarily have the full programming of what we were genetically predisposed to. Just like with humans, we've got disorders like ADHD, schizophrenia, things that just don't really manifest until a certain age they do manifest. And so sometimes that programming, because of course genetics have an influence as well, nature versus nurture, it's kind of all of it in animals. We see those things crop up at a time that, you know, they could have done everything right, all the right socialization, puppy class, getting out still through the rest of the first year of life to help that brain develop more normal. It just would have been so much worse if they hadn't.
BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I love that you brought that up because there are those people that have done everything right. And then you're like, I socialized my dog. And on the flip side too, there's also been people that have not done anything and their dogs are like fine. You know, as they say in like what they're doing in life, I think both ways, because DNA does, I think I remember Dr. Radassa saying, and I could be wrong at this quote, but you know, 50% of it is DNA, right? So you could do everything right and it's just, you know, but it would have been worse, way worse.
Right.
If you did not. So what age, if there's even this, an answer to this. So I know when I see a puppy, say they're 5 months old, obviously if they're like young and they're already like that, you know, if they're still in that fear, in that socialization period, and they're like super fearful already, I know that that's a puppy emergency. So at what are the signs or age that you see? Same with like, I have a 5 month old come in and I'm like, ooh, he is like shut down. I'm like, this is an emergency. We got to like get on this. What ages or what signs do you see that you're like, you may want to see a veterinary behaviorist? Because I feel like it's a puppy emergency when they're already showing those signs. So what signs to you or that have you seen are like alarming and somebody should seek professional help like ASAP?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a lot of them that we can go through. There's one study that comes to mind that there was a veterinary behaviorist who looked at behavior of puppies at one of their first few veterinary visits and sort of categorized that there was about 10% of the puppies they saw that were just really behaviorally abnormal with stressed body language and avoidant behaviors. And they followed up to say, are these puppies going to grow out of this? Or is this something that they're not going to grow out of. And about a year later, when they followed up, pretty much those same puppies who were now adult dogs had those same fearful behaviors or some significantly abnormal behavior. So we like to say in behavior that we're usually going to grow into our behavior disorders, not out of them. So you're absolutely right. We want to be able to figure out who needs intervention and how do we know? So I usually would say if around 14 to 16 weeks of age, you're seeing a lot of those fear behaviors, aggression behaviors, that I have a similar saying, it's like behavioral bleeding out. I learned in my residency that it's really an emergency. We do really want to see a veterinary behaviorist right away because of although we can make the most difference in that socialization period, that synaptic pruning is still happening that first year of life. So there is a lot of difference we can make with aggressive treatment, whatever that looks like for that individual dog. Behavior modification therapies to counter condition or change that association of the things that are scary to positive. In some cases, medications or calming supplements to try and change that chemistry so the brain forms more normal. But I've also had experiences where people have told me things like the puppy came home, right? My patients. So we know that they ended up pretty abnormal. Came home at 8 weeks of age and for the first month was hiding or couldn't be convinced to go in or out or up to people. I mean, that is so extremely abnormal. I wouldn't be waiting to 14 weeks away. So extreme abnormal behaviors, aggression's another one. Like any aggression over items, towards people, towards handling, that kind of stuff we want to help with right away to figure out, is there some medical component here? Like I've had painful puppies before, GI, stuff like that. Or is it just behaviorally abnormal, needs help ASAP?
Now, you touched on something before, but I have to bring it up because I think I've experienced in the last few years this often. People that get puppies from breeders, great. I'm all for a good breeder. My next dog, I'll probably do. I've rescued. I've done the puppy store. I've gotten puppies shipped online. I've done every good and bad way to get a puppy that you could. So my next is from a breeder because I want specific things that I can't chance with. Not, it's still a chance, but I can't chance, you know, with the rescue. But for these, some of these breeders, like you were saying, like, in sometimes like in Amish country, I know a lot, like you were saying, like Pennsylvania, there's so many breeders. I can't tell you, and I don't know if maybe I'm just getting these cases more recently, but how many puppies have come and we see the behaviors that you're talking about. So I remember one of my clients, I think she went to you guys, but her dog showed me, I went to see the dog. It was a golden retriever, a young dog. You're still in that phase. And the dog was terrified. I said, can you show me video? Oh, they sent me videos. They show me videos of the place where they were on agility equipment, like all this stuff. And I was like, well, that's good. Like they did that kind of stuff. And then we dug a little deeper and, you know, the only people they saw was at the breeders, which what they didn't really have people visiting the puppies or anything. And they were never taken off of that property.
Yeah.
So when the dog now came into the, I believe they gave the puppy back. And I think I remember talking to Dr. Adas about this once, like give them back to where they stay that they'll thrive. You know what I mean? It was kind of like with all the greyhounds, they stopped racing and then they were adopting them into the homes and they were like a hot mess. Like it was like, all I knew was crate and racing. They didn't know this other stuff. So what other things can you touch on with that? Because I think it's, and do you think that's a good idea? I think people feel like they're giving up on their puppies, but the puppy to get to where we need him to be, or he may never be there, is so much work of a dog, like you're saying, like 8 weeks old, and they're already showing these signs. So what can you kind of point people in the direction of, should they be like questioning their breeders about this stuff? Like, how can we help avoid some of these clients, the pet parents, that having this happen? Because it is devastating. You think you're doing everything right. Yeah. You're getting it from a reputable, they could be a reputable breeder, and the puppy's a mess when they get to you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much to be said if our goal is to have a happy, behaviorally and physically healthy dog from the source of where we get it from. I mean, we do have that information from studies, and I think, you know, I've always had dogs that are rescues and stuff, but they also came with their own behavior disorders. So we know that the source makes a difference. So for example, getting a dog from a responsible responsible breeder, that we're less likely to have undesirable behaviors compared to other sources, like getting it from a friend, getting it from a pet store, adoption from the shelter and rescue, that we're often more likely to have certain behavior disorders, as well as, you know, the pet stores. Often these guys are coming from puppy mills. So they're sourced from somewhere else in the country. They're frequently going to have all these abnormal things develop because of early life experiences that are really abnormal. So we're separated from mom and weaned earlier than we probably should be, separated from our litter mates, trucked halfway across the country. And then we're going to be placed in a social isolation, essentially, in this pet store until someone picks us out. And often just to start, these dogs are not necessarily chosen for temperament and behavior. They were chosen for looking really cute and aesthetics and stuff. So that's never a great plan to have a healthy dog mentally and physically, as we really want to be choosing for health. So those dogs alone, we know, are more likely to exhibit aggression towards dogs, aggression towards unfamiliar people, non-social fear. So that's fears of noises, objects, separation-related disorders, house soiling issues, like the list goes on and on and on, right? So these things really do make a difference. So I completely understand, even though I support the, you know, when people say adopt, don't shop, I understand where they're coming from. But at the same time, we also have, I see the other side of that, of families who needed the family dog and the kid dog, and they didn't get it from that place. They got it from, say, a pet store. And unfortunately, now we're dealing with issues like aggression and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I hear you on all of it. So I want to do a little, it's not really a game, but I want to do 60 seconds of different things, whether it's like a surface, I'm trying to find my stopwatch, places you can take your dog. So we're going to go back and forth. I'll do one, you do one. Perfect. Of ways that people can safely socialize their dog. So I'll start and then I'll have you go. Okay. All right. So a Home Depot in a cart with a towel in the cart. And yep, always with absolutely. Treats, by the way. I want to go over that after this about how to socialize. Go ahead. You're
definitely. Up. Other places. So I just took my friend's puppy out. We went to Starbucks so that we could sit outside, see things going by. And the puppy was on a towel.
Taking your dog to the bank in the car, fastened with maybe a Kong in the back.
Yeah, that's perfect. Really, some interesting ones. So my friends that had a puppy wanted to do fireworks. So they looked up where fireworks would be in the city, drove to far enough away they wouldn't be really loud, opened the back door, puppy was in the back seat eating treats as we heard fireworks far off.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. I think you're winning. Being around different people. So kids, men, with hats, different beards, kind of, it's almost like if you could go to New York in Times Square and kind of socialize your puppy that way. But as many experiences, and like I said, after this, we'll go over how to do it correctly. Yeah. Okay, you're up. One more.
Having different people come over every single day, your neighbors, your friends, family, so that we have people that look all sorts of different ways, all those things. And then we'll qualify, how do we make sure that that's a good experience after?
Yeah. And then I'll do one more. Having your dog play with safe dogs, so dogs that have a negative fecal exam, usually within the 6 months, and that they're up to date on whatever vaccines they are up to date with. So if it's 8-week puppy, they can play with another 8-week puppy as long as they have the up-to-date vaccines and that negative fecal.
Yeah, and that's what puppy class is great for, because you have part of that puppy class is dedicated to playing with other puppies that are going to be matched for temperament and size, as well as if you've got even friends who have vaccinated dogs, even if they're adults, as long as we know their socialization history, we don't have a bite history. We're not trying to traumatize somebody, right? It just takes one bite during this really serious period to influence them later. But a well-socialized dog that's up to date on vaccines in a safe location, like your home, their home, your mutual yard, something like that.
Yes, love that. So let's talk of, everyone thinks socialization means, I think this is a very important part that we can't forget to talk about, means getting your dogs with as many people, as many dogs, like as they can. And, you know, my dog was 60 dogs and these things. But if your dog wasn't having a great time, then it's not a great idea. So we used to do in puppy class, we used to do pass the puppy, where, you know, getting them used to passing them to different people, feeling their leg, feeling their paws, their mouth, everything while giving them food. But some dogs weren't like thrilled with it. And it was like years later that I've been practicing this fun game that I was like, some of these dogs, this is way too much, like way too much to have five strangers holding them, petting them, and giving them food. So I know in my training for socialization, you have to make sure once that, let's say dog to dog, the dog has to be had, both dogs have to be having fun, right? Or it's not fun for one of them. So I think in every scenario, for me, it always has to involve food. And you can tell me if that's wrong. It has to involve food and making sure that that puppy is actually having fun. I don't, and you can go through some like things people can look for, but I always hear it drives me crazy. Like my pet parents, they'll say, "Oh, he's fine. No, he's fine." And I'm like, "He's not fine. He's like not having a good time. He's lip licking. He's doing all these things. He's avoiding. He's turning away." So what are some things or other things that you would suggest that actually socializing correctly and signs that people can look for if their dog's not having, their puppy's not having a good time?
Yeah. That's the, how do we do it? Right. Because I was thinking about this when we were talking about, you know, I got my puppy out, but they're so abnormal still. It's, well, what was it looking like? How good of a time was that? And I really, this really was hit home for me yesterday when I was at Starbucks with the puppy, because all these people were coming in hot to pet the puppy. Of course, we'd have this little conversation. They'd walk by, they'd look at the puppy with like heart eyes. And I was like, "Here, you can come say hi. Here's a treat." And some, what I saw really common was they come in hot, reaching for the head, right over the eyes and the head. And that's an uncomfortable interaction for a lot of dogs. We often see the little tiny signs, like they're going to duck their head down or away or do this. And people were not noticing it. And we know that that kind of body language is hard for them to recognize, that studies that look at people who own dogs and people who don't own dogs, that they actually aren't better at reading body language. So we know it's not just intuitive by living with them. We really have to seek out resources to educate ourselves, to learn about body language signals of stress. I frequently find sort of what I think you're saying, that people think the absence of aggression or sheer panic means that they're great. And that's not it. There's so many shades of gray of little signs to look for to indicate it's going well. So what I was doing in that moment was we had our treats out, because I agree with you. I think treats is the best way to have what we call a high rate of reinforcement. So a lot of little data points that this is something that's good and positive. Of course, we can use games and toys and things like that as well. But in these specific scenarios where we're trying to have a positive interaction with lots of people, is directing that interaction. And what that would look like is, as people start to come up and I realize they're just going to reach for this puppy on the head and this puppy's not liking that, let me just guide this. So here's my treats. Here, come say hi to the puppy. Here's a treat, putting it right in their hand. It's sort of like redirecting puppies into more appropriate behavior, or redirecting humans, and just guiding that. And so eventually was also telling people, please just don't pet them on top of the head. So recognizing, what is your puppy like? Looking at how it's going, what do they seem to be enjoying or not? So that way, if people approach, they have a treat in their hand, the puppy can now approach of their own will to take that treat, as opposed to someone coming to them and overwhelming them, that's going to be a more positive experience. And then me continuing to kind of drop a couple of treats as that person is staying close by and talking to them. But it is important to manage those interactions so that if people are not really appropriate or doing something the puppy likes, that we're not going to traumatize the puppy.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Yeah, another tip I can give to for my clients that I say is, I always say this all the time, that dogs are great at communicating, we are not. So if the puppy is not going up to you, well, one, they're going up to you to smell half the time. So I tell people all the time, the dogs are not coming for you to reach for them, they're just coming to gather that information. Yeah. So for the puppy to have them you know, actually wanting to interact with you. And if they're not, that's when like the treat comes in, just throw them a treat. So you're not putting pressure on that puppy. You're not putting your puppy in that, you know, how annoying can it be for a puppy that like 20 people are trying to pet them at Starbucks and they're like not having it.
Yeah. I've got a stock photo in a puppy socialization lecture and it's just a little puppy and the little brows are furrowed, which is worried, and the ears are back, and there's three girls trying to pet it on the head at the same time. Like, that is not what we want for socialization. Then the photo I show next is someone who is sitting a little bit away or kneeling with the treat in the hand. So now the puppy can approach and control the interaction, feel safer.
I love that. I love that. I'm trying to think if I missed... I just love this topic because I think it's so misunderstood. And I wanted to have somebody that was like an expert in, you know, in behavior for this, because I think it's just so important. And when you do get a puppy, it's like, it's a lot of work to have. I know there are checklists. I used to have one that I should start doing that of kind of things that you can socialize your puppy. I'm sure if you just go on AI, give me a checklist and you, because you forget, right? You're like, my dog's never seen a skateboard before. I didn't think to have a skateboard before. Is that something you would suggest to a new puppy owner? Or like you said, obviously their goals, but do you think that would be helpful for them to do something like that if you're getting a puppy?
Yeah, making a list of all the things that you're going to see and hear. So I have people, for example, that have a family member who's ill, and maybe that person has a wheelchair or a walker, or they have assistants that come in to help that person. So thinking about what that looks like in our life, make sure that we're having exposure to those types of equipment and things or sounds, things that we see outside. A lot of dogs I find are scared of bikes, skateboards, all that. So making sure that we're getting out to places, if you're not a skateboarder, you know, going somewhere that they're going to be going by, you've got your treats, so that as the puppy sees that thing, that they can have treats one per second or so until it's gone, and then the treats are gone. And same thing that you said, all the places we'd want to take the puppy, all the different ways people look, beards, glasses, hats, masks, all that stuff. I agree with you.
Now, if... okay, so you get your... You don't socialize your puppy. And now, say you adopt a dog. So I know when I adopted my dog... he was a rescue. He was about a year old. So I was like, ugh, okay, these certain things. So what I did is the things that were important to me, right? So I have kids. He has to be good with kids. Has to be good in a crate because my dogs, like, were very busy. Has to be crate trained. Has to be okay with other dogs because he'd be going to school every day. Has to be okay in a car because, you know, he's going... he's going to be going in a car daily back and forth. A couple of things I didn't test, bikes. He's reactive to bikes, skateboards. He used to be a lot more reactive to everything. Now it's just those two things that, you know, if he's in the car, I mean, I literally have to chuck hot dogs if I see a motorcycle on
the floor. There.
Yeah, because, you know, but that's okay. That's manageable. But I was able to test. I was working with a rescue and they let me take him for a couple of days and could do a test. A lot of people don't get to do that. So if you're past that socialization period, I usually tell people it's more now building positive associations. What are things some people that obviously if it's extreme or you're seeing these fears, definitely see a veterinary behaviorist like yourself, you know, soon to be completely veterinary.
2 months.
Yeah, 2 months. But what can you suggest people come like, okay, I have this rescue now and he is really afraid of bikes. Like, what are some things that they can do to start at least working on that process?
Yeah, I mean, first, it's good to have a diagnosis if we have what seems to be a significant fear issue. And the great analogy I can give to that is I had a reactive dog, and the root of the beginning of it, because he would lunge and bark at dogs, was fear aggression towards other dogs, potentially some frustration. Some dogs we think he wanted to play with, some dogs he was definitely scared of. And later in life, he developed reactivity to trucks and SUVs, but this was different. So he had developed noise phobia, and I just didn't realize. I missed all these little signs of other noises that worried him, like wind in the leaves and airplane noises. And so that was something that we really needed to understand that by seeing a veterinary behaviorist to get the right treatment for him. Although there's a lot we can do just with good positive reinforcement-based training, like redirecting them into teaching them cues I can use to redirect their attention, using the principles of training to do counter conditioning. So I'm going to take what's really scary for you, expose you at a level that is not scary. So that's distance usually, and then pair that with positive things like treats. But in some cases, we can only make it so far without ourselves, depending on the level of food motivation, the level of severity, how long it's been going on for. So sometimes we do need actual treatment, like you're saying. So it's always good to start with your veterinarian, especially if something new has popped up. Make sure we're not missing something that we find on physical exam, baseline lab work, things like that. And then based on severity, we can decide, do I just need a good positive reinforcement-based trainer? And for that, I would say if we're making continual progress, we can be exposed at a level that the dog can think, process, take food, and build new associations, versus if they're really just not able to kind of deal in those situations and learn and move forward, for sure, veterinary behaviorist.
Okay. I mean, anything for behavior, I think it's like super smart. Like you said, go to your veterinarian, but I think they can only take you so far. And going to a veterinarian behaviorist is like number one for me. And really knowing, listen, I love rescue. I love like shelters. I love people doing that. But it's just make sure if your puppies did miss that socialization period, maybe test some things out before, because it is a long road. And if you've had a reactive dog before, I've dealt with it is a long process of many years that does get better, but not completely for a lot.
And it's often a lifelong issue. We might be managing it long term, but there was never going to be a day that we were going to go on walks without his delicious food, right? Treats was like an EpiPen for us. It really is a lifelong commitment in a lot of cases, if it's been going on for a while. For sure, the earlier that we can start treating it, so we don't want to wait till it's really, really bad, the often better prognosis, the less amount of treatment we might need for that thing, for sure. But I think this is, you know, it's interesting because we have studies that say, okay, so we've got these aggressive dogs. Let's look back. What were the risk factors that they seem to have in common? And it's we even see the effects of things like early training and socialization, like puppy classes, relating to less likelihood of fear aggression. So to me, that's a something that I just can't kind of emphasize enough. I could have a dog that just by going to puppy class, all these other factors aside, is 1.5 less times likely to be aggressive towards unfamiliar people later on in life, just from that one thing alone.
I love when I talk to doctors, they always talk about studies, which I love. And you guys probably get, you know, read and get them all. I absolutely love them. And then again, I'm going to say it one more time. So puppy class is from 8 to 16 weeks. So when people would call me, my dog's 17 weeks, you've missed puppy class, right? So what are the best ages that you should be socializing, taking your dog out, just to reiterate, once you get your puppy at 8 weeks old?
Then. That is one right away. As soon as you can get that puppy, you want to, before you get the puppy, you want to have your class picked out so you can go right into it and have the right timing. Because of course, they're usually kind of a rolling every 6 weeks type thing. You want to make sure also they're, like we've already said, they're not all created equal. We talked about location, but methods, training methods make a huge difference. We know just from being more likely to use positive reinforcement in comparison to positive punishment and negative reinforcement, which we can talk about in a second, that we're 2 to 3 times less likely to have aggression. And other unwanted behaviors, like we can have reduced trainability and bravery and things like that with those other methods. So positive reinforcement being, I'm adding something to the situation that makes it more likely for the puppy to offer this behavior again, like we talked about treats, game, toy. And then positive punishment is what we think about classically, like a punishment, verbal, scolding them when they've done something we don't like, or application of a shock or correction after they did something we don't want them to do again. Negative reinforcement being, I'm applying that unpleasant thing, which could be like, you know, tightening on the leash or shocking you. And then I release that once you're doing the thing that I like. So let's say I wanted you to sit. I said, sit, you didn't listen. I apply those unpleasant methods until you sit, then I release that. So those have been shown to be less likely to be ending up with a good, socialized, happy, well-rounded dog as well. So those methods make a big difference. We have to make sure we know what tools they're using and not using.
Yeah, I always tell people this too. And I just also, we didn't talk about this, but people that are sending their puppies away to board and trains. So I do puppy board and trains. I like the puppies right at 8 weeks. They go to my school from day one, but they're home with kids with me. We take them on outings, safe outings, all positive reinforcement. And it's funny, all of the puppies that I have done board and trains with, when I see them now, because a lot of them still like come to the school, they lose their minds. Like, you know, I'm their other mother. They lose their minds because everything was so positive with me and treats, and I don't ever even use no. And their potty training was great because they're done in 2 weeks because, you know, they have that social time and they do adapt like right back to with mom and dad and great. But there's people that send, you know, I know not everybody's me and I'm sure I can even do things better, but there are places that you send, a lot of places, unfortunately, that you are sending your puppies to that are using what you were talking about, shock collars on their dogs, prong collars, even slip leads. What would you suggest if somebody is doing a board and train and they're using those methods as a veterinarian?
I have a lot of opinions about it, of course, but the one is that training in general, whether it's one-on-one, it's a group class, it's board and train, training is to train the humans, to be able to train the dog. And I think it's great to have like a puppy socialization board and train for the people that they can't do it. They don't have time, energy, whatever it is. It really is a full-time job on top of your other full-time job, which is why I don't have one, a puppy. So I think that's great. However, it's 0.001% of the board and trains that I've experienced that usually they're using aversive tools that use pain, discomfort, fear to change behavior, which we know really suppresses behavior and makes dogs more anxious and more aggressive and things like that. So the questions I'd be asking, one, how well trained is that trainer? What kind of certifications do they have? Because a trainer doesn't have to have any certifications, as you of course know, to make that their livelihood. And that's, you know, you wouldn't choose that for other specialists, right? Other doctors, dietitian, nutrition. You want someone who's got knowledge of learning theory and some advanced education there to guide them. And, you know, that's the first question. What are the certifications? What type of tools and methods do they use? When we're sort of vetting a new training partner, we say, under what conditions will you use aversive tools? And the answer is none. That's the only right answer, really, right? So this really influences the rest of your puppy's life, especially during that socialization period. So it's super important to be asking those questions.
I love that. People, please, if you take anything from this podcast, you know, I have to thank you again, Dr. Petroff, for being here because I saw your post. I talk about it all the time. And if you go back to any of my puppy socialization posts, you're going to see in the comments, it's wild. Like my vet told me not to until this, till they have all their vaccines, till they do this. It's like wild. So as soon as I saw that, it sparked me that I had to have an expert in this on. So, you know, moral of the story is 8 weeks old, get your puppies out there in safe places. I always have like wipes. I'm not walking my puppies in odd grass areas anyway. You know what I mean? Right. We're taking them to safe places. And then also make sure if you're doing any kind of training with the puppy, make sure you're vetting them to make sure they are force-free. No chokers, no prongs, no shock collars, correct?
Yeah, exactly. The tools make a difference. And it's kind of like smoking, we always say. You can stop using the tools, but there's still going to be certain effects long-term in a lot of cases that you can't necessarily undo. So better to just choose the more effective and humane methods from the first place.
Yay. I'm stealing that analogy as well. Well, thank you so, so much for being here. Follow, where can we find you? I know where to find you because I follow you, but where can everybody find you?
I'm Long Island Behavior Vet on Instagram and TikTok and Veterinary Behavior with Dr. Petroff, Dr. Megan Petroff on Facebook. So, and then if they're on Long Island, they can come see us in person for a consultation if they have significant problems, for sure.
Yes, yes. And your TikToks and your Instagrams are amazing. I love watching them. They're like so great. So definitely follow. Great, great tips. I always learn so much from you every time I talk to you. Thank you again for coming on. People, puppies, socialize your puppies. Oh, and I forgot. Today's the 100th episode of my podcast.
Oh my God. Congratulations. It's amazing.
Well, you've made the 100th podcast.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. So thank you again, everyone at home. Make sure you follow Megan. Follow me at Dynamite Dog Training, at Lucky Dog Training Club. We will see you next time. Barks to Basics with Jamie Diaz.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.